You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Wednesday, August 17th. First day of school for my kids, at least the ones who are in Catholic school here in Central Kentucky. Your school year may have already started, or you still may be awaiting it, but man, first day of school. I don't know that there'll be any back-to-school photos taken at the Allen home this morning. There's no joy in Mudville. Actually, you know, my kids aren't too bad. I mean, they don't mind going back to see their friends and everything, but they haven't exactly been geeked up about it. So pray for them. Pray for all students. Pray for all teachers who are either just starting or just getting their feet wet the last week or so, or will soon, a brand new school year, and particularly those teachers. Believe me, my respect for the teaching vocation grew enormously when I started teaching one class 10 years ago this year. Actually, I'm just starting my 11th year teaching one class at our local Catholic high school. It's tough. That's just one class. People who think teachers get into teaching because it's a lighter workload have no idea what they're talking about. Anyway, so thank God for all the opportunities that are there in education, and those who serve so faithfully, and those who are instructing their students at home. Give thanks for it all. Anyway, my guest next hour will be Tony Rossi. Tony, who works for the media ministry, the Christophers, whose motto is, better to light a candle than to curse the darkness, looking at stories of inspiration, of positivity, and so forth. And Christophers, that very word Christopher means Christ bearer, of course, to see the signs of Christ's grace in the midst of daily life. They've had a lot of grist for the mill with this 2016 Olympic Games. I've watched more of the 2016 Olympics than I did the 2012 Olympics or the 2008. I don't know, this may be the most Olympics I've watched since Atlanta in 96, to be honest with you. And there have been, it seems like, no shortage of great stories. Yeah, I know there's the Hope Solo tweet. I mean, there's been some negativity associated with the games, the doping focus, and so forth. But there have been some great stories, too. I mean, Michael Phelps, Katie Ledecky, Simone Biles, Usain Bolt, Dana Vollmer, in my opinion, a great story. Laurie Hernandez. I mean, you go down the list, there are just some great Olympic stories. So Tony Rossi will be on to talk about those in the second hour today, beginning about 15 after the hour. So tune in for that. Also, why the Eucharist is not the bread of angels, why God is the best storyteller, why Eric Metaxas makes no sense, and the wrong math for ethics. All that coming up on the program today. Certainly welcome your calls anytime. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can call or text that number, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter, Mike Allen Show, the handle. And if you're not yet a Mike Allen Show follower on Twitter, please do so. My Twitter numbers are embarrassing. Anemic. Maybe it's because I'm old. I don't know. Anyway, but those are different ways you can contact me. I'll give you the question of the day in the next segment so that you can follow along. Great night last night before the school routine started. Took my daughter to her first softball practice, fall ball. She's playing, my 11-year-old. She likes softball. You know, she's pretty good at it. And she's got a really good coach this time around, guy that she knew from as an assistant coach from a previous year. So that should be fun, though I will admit to having a fleeting thought when it was raining early yesterday afternoon. Isn't that terrible? First practice of the year, I'm already hoping that it's rained out. but just, you know, busyness, that's, it gets all of us, I guess. So anyway, got to take her to that, and then came home, and my wife had prepared a delicious dinner of some vegetables and a little bit of chicken. It's really, really nice. I went to a farmer's market on Sunday. This is that time of year. Man, sweet corn, homegrown tomatoes, can't beat it. So got to enjoy a little bit of that last night. And as I said, my last day here before school starts today, I have my one class, Old Testament to seniors this fall. Be an interesting experience for me teaching seniors. So looking forward to it. Looking at the, actually, I was yesterday, when I got through with the show, had a run to a quick meeting, but tried to call my wife a couple of times on my way there right after the show was over. And could not get through to her, at the, you know, kept going to her voicemail and so forth. And I wasn't really worried, but wasn't sure where she was. I'd gone by the house. She wasn't there. Finally, she called me back about an hour later. And she said, "I'm sorry that I couldn't answer your call. I went to Mass. My show here ends at 8. We have an 8:15 Mass at our local parish. We just live right across the street. I mean, literally, I could take a golf ball, drop it in my front yard, and if I'm hitting the ball well, I could hit a 9-iron across over into the front yard of the church. Wouldn't recommend it, but I could." Anyway, she said I'd gone to Mass, and so just small talk. And I said, just for the heck of it? And she said, "No, for the heaven of it." And then she kind of laughed. "But well played, ma'am, well played. Yes, for the heaven of it." That's what the Eucharist is in our Catholic understanding. This feast of feasts, this source and summit of our Christian life, it is the source from which our strength derives. It is the summit to which we aspire. In many ways, that's what heaven itself is. I think we err when we think of heaven simply as some future place to which we hope to arrive one day. That certainly is a, by God's grace and God willing, future destination. But it's also a present reality. Pope Benedict talked about this in his second letter, I believe it was, called Saved in Hope, Spe Salvi. He talked about that verse from the letter to the Hebrews, chapter 11, that says, "Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen." The substance, it's something real, substantial, just like the Eucharist. The Eucharist is substantial food. It is the body and blood of Christ veiled under the signs of bread and wine, but substantially, the substance of the stuff has changed. When we say faith is the substance of things hoped for, it means we actually grab onto something real and now, that yes, one day will be revealed in its fullness of glory, but to share in the divine life of Christ is to receive a substance of heaven even now. And so to go and to receive the Eucharist, to go and to receive the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus, we're not only strengthening our spirit, we're not only strengthening our faith for the walk ahead, but we are experiencing that, a foretaste of that to which we aspire, just for the heaven of it. Great line. And, you know, there's a great quote, I think it was from St. Maximilian Kolbe. Something along the lines, you know, we sometimes, one of the sort of metaphors, euphemisms you use for the Eucharist, and there are a whole host of them, that with, you know, the Lamb's Supper, the Lord's Supper, the Last Supper, the Living Bread, and so forth. But there's one we use called the Bread of Angels. We have a whole hymn, the Latin title, Panis Angelicus. Beautiful, mesmerizing, gripping hymn, in which we call the Eucharist the Bread of Angels. It's the bread from heaven. It's greater than that bread that the Israelites ate in the desert, the manna, which, as Jesus said, "Moses gave you that bread from heaven. You eat it, you will still die, but the bread that I give, that I myself am, If you eat of that, you will never die. But here's the problem. In all analogies and metaphors, if you push them too far, they no longer work. But the only problem with the term bread of angels is that it's not true. The angels are not privileged to receive Eucharist. Why are the angels not privileged to receive Eucharist? Because an angel is pure spirit. An angel has no body. Certainly angels can manifest an appearance, being angels among us without us knowing it, but they are non-physical beings. We are the only persons, of course, God the Son through the incarnation as well, but human beings, the only persons in the visible world, in the universe, the only persons who have bodies. And therefore, the Eucharist, in which God shares his own divine life with us through real and tangible things, bread and wine transformed into the body and blood of Christ, we as material beings, we alone are privileged to receive the Eucharist. This is why St. Maximilian Kolbe said, if angels could be jealous, they would be jealous of humanity for one reason, for the Holy Eucharist. Don't take it for granted. It is a little taste of heaven. Even now, as my wife said so brilliantly and off the cuff, just for the heaven of it. Praise God for his gifts and for condescending to share them even with sinners like me. We'll be back on the other side of the break with the question of the day. This is the Mike Allen Show. You are listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on Breadbox Media. Speaking of the Eucharist, as we were doing the last segment, there is a bread box in every Catholic church. It's called the Tabernacle, where the Blessed Sacrament, the body, blood, soul of divinity, veiled, as I said, under the appearance of bread, exists in the host, in the tabernacle of the church. That's why, really, every time you pass by a Catholic church, it's not bad to make a small bow and to make the sign of the cross as a sign of this sacred space that you are passing. That's really the inspiration of our name, Breadbox Media. Not only because there's a nourishment in being encouraged in the faith, but ultimately we hope to point people to that fullness of the faith that is found in that sublime gift of gifts, Christ's own gift of his body and blood. Not only the truth and the beauty and the good news of Jesus, but an avenue by which we may come into communion with him. Not only with him, but with the church that Christ founded upon St. Peter and the Apostles. So you can check out what we do at breadboxmedia.com. We have a variety, really a diversity of different contributors with different styles, perspectives, temperaments, topics, really dotted all around the country in various places, coastal areas across the Midwest, all with their own unique perspective, but all united together, of course, around the table of our Lord. So check it out, breadboxmedia.com. If you want to download the app, highly recommend it through your digital device, unless you have an ancient piece of machinery like I do, and you can listen right through your device that way. You can also stream us live, or you can listen to podcasts after the fact. Some people enjoy that through Podbean, through iTunes, or through Google Play. You can also become a friend of your favorite show, including this show, if I'm your favorite. You can come on and make a monthly donation, gift, contribution, and you will receive some online access to some exclusive content. Check it all out at breadboxmedia.com. My question of the day, I'm going to be talking in greater detail with Tony Rossi about this in the next hour, Tony Rossi of the Christophers, is who do you think has been the most inspiring Olympic story so far? I mean, you know, the NBC knows what they're doing, right? So they, here you have a lot of different sports that most Americans don't usually watch. I mean, if you put the high jump on in a non-Olympic year, ratings are going to be pretty low. And so the Olympics has a certain cachet that makes people want to watch. And then NBC knows what to do. It's through these human interest stories, because a lot of the viewers of the Olympics are not even typically sports fans. And so they've really done a good job that I've seen anyway, without being melodramatic, and giving the backstory behind a lot of these athletes, which I think has really helped not only you to appreciate the achievement in the field of play, but you can appreciate some of the challenges, some of the obstacles that these athletes have had to overcome that have had nothing to do even with sport. So to you, who has been Rio's most inspiring Olympian? 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. Or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Now, these sorts of things seem to pop up in every Olympics. Beautiful stories, and they really tap into the spirit of the Olympic ideal. There was one yesterday, and maybe I'll touch on this with Tony Rossi a little bit later in the program. During the 5,000 meters, it was the second heat of the women's 5,000 meters. I don't know if you saw this story, but New Zealand's Nikki Hamblin fell. And not only did she fall, but Abby DiAgostino from the United States also tripped and fell over Hamblin. Nikki Hamblin from New Zealand. Somewhat reminiscent, I guess, if you recall the whole Zola Budd and Mary Decker run-in that happened back in 1984 in L.A., if you're that old and you can remember that. Anyway, the two had never bet before, Hamblin or DiAgostino. But DiAgostino was not going to let Hamblin lie on the ground. As it unfolded, she leans down over Hamblin and says, "Get up, get up. We have to finish. This is the Olympic Games. We have to finish this." In many ways, reminiscent of the 1992 Barcelona Games. Now I'm really showing my age. When Derek Redmond of the UK popped a hamstring, I think it was in the 400 meters, still a good distance away from finishing the race. As he lay there crumpled on the ground, his dad climbed out of the stands, if you remember, fought through the guards, got to him, and helped his own son cross the finish line. Well after the winners, of course, and with the crowd and standing ovation and tears flowing, and Redmond himself just weeping. Part disappointment and part the rush of finishing the Olympic race. Well, you had the same sort of setting yesterday, but it was two fellow runners, neither of whom knew each other before. Anyway, DiAgostino told Hamblin, "Get up, we have to finish. This is the Olympic Games, we have to finish." DiAgostino helped Hamblin up, then Hamblin helped DiAgostino as well, and then the two continued the race with DiAgostino struggling severely after injuring her knee in the fall. As she ran, Hamblin said she looked back to see how DiAgostino was doing, but the American simply waved her on, telling her to just keep going, just keep running. And so they finished next to last and last, more than a minute behind the winning time in the 5,000 meters. Asked what she said to DiAgostino at the end of the race after they embraced, Hamblin replied, "What could I say to her? She helped me up, and she finished the race." Boy, I tell you what, you talk about something that'll go on an inspirational poster right there. And a model, really, a metaphor of our interdependence in the life of Christian discipleship. What could I say to her? She helped me up, and she finished the race. I couldn't have big enough words to tell her how amazing she is. You know, St. Paul uses those analogies of running at one point. I think it's in 1 Corinthians. It evokes images of that. Hamblin said, "I'm so grateful to Abby for helping me. That girl was the Olympic spirit right there. I am so impressed and so inspired by that." So as I said, next segment, we're going to talk to Tony Rossi about some of these. What are the ones that he has noticed? Does he have any thoughts on those as well? Maybe some that's a little bit more obscure. They do great work, the Christophers, by the way, of trying to point out those instances of virtue, because virtue shines through. As I've told you before, you want to get me misty-eyed in a movie, it's not typically going to be what you think that pushes me over the edge, makes me embarrass my children, and become a blubbering mess. I get emotional in a movie when I see the beauty of virtue, just pure goodness, someone's self-sacrifice, self-giving. That, to me, is beauty, and that is really the glory of what it means to be a saint, is to come to that place where virtue radiates through in the way that we treat others, even in, maybe we could say, especially in our most challenging circumstances. All right, let's move on to our What Were You Thinking nominees of the day. We've got several, as we like to say. Go dumb or go home. Racism, a common theme on a few of these anyway. You heard about Ellen tweeting out a picture of her, I'm sure photoshopped, riding on the back of Usain Bolt. Well, it has been deemed racist. Evidently, the tweet that she had with the photo of her riding piggyback on Usain Bolt, the fabulous Jamaican sprinter, says, "This is how I'm running errands from now on." Evidently, it provoked some degree of Twitter backlash. Somebody tweeted, "This is so gross. Fire whoever did this." Another person, "So the first thing that pops in your head when looking at this pic is, oh, let me jump onto his back like he's a common mule." Please, people, really? Has there ever been anything from Ellen DeGeneres that screamed racism to you before? I mean, she and Usain Bolt are friends, for heaven's sake. She was talking about his speed, not his race. So all those people who had a Twitter meltdown, which some people tend to do, they get our first nomination of the What Were You Thinking Award. The second nominee, and believe me, I'm all for trying to lighten the mood, but how about this Italian restaurant under fire in New Mexico for making merchandise with a slogan that says, "Black olives matter." KOAT TV reported that Paisanos in Albuquerque is selling "Black olives matter" shirts and hats after making national headlines for putting the phrase on a sign outside the restaurant. They're getting complaints that they're mocking or making light of a significant social justice cause. And while I'm typically, you know, I don't have a problem with sort of keeping people from taking themselves too seriously, I'm not sure that was a good play there. Black olives matter, really. So that'll be my second nominee. The winner, though, we're going to give to the people in California at a university who are building a 55-foot-tall statue of a nude woman. Really? It's hard enough. I've got sons. It's hard enough for me to get through the checkout aisle without them gazing at every soft porn magazine on the rack. Glad I don't live there. Look away, son. Look away. 55-foot-tall nude woman. Anyway, we'll be back with more. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
right at the bottom of the hour, Mike, right back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Wednesday, August 17th, asking a question of the day. Who has been the most inspiring Olympian in Rio to you? We'll be talking to Tony Rossi from the Christophers about this in the next hour. But if you want to chime in on that, 573-4-BREAD-4, you can call or text 573-4-BREAD-4. Or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your thought on Facebook or on Twitter. Simone Biles, I would have to imagine, is going to make some people's list, not only because of her remarkable ability and performances, winning the gold medal yesterday in the floor exercise, which really, I saw a video that was put together by somebody that I guess compared and contrasted the floor exercise routine from this Olympics, 2016, with the 1976 Olympics 40 years ago. So I said, that's the first Olympics I remember watching. It was the 1976 Summer Games in Montreal, in which Nadia Comaneci, the gymnast, made such waves by becoming the first gymnast ever to score a perfect 10. She had several in that Olympic Games, inspired a theme song. I was 10. I was mesmerized by young Nadia. And of course, I've always considered, therefore, in my memory, Nadia to be the greatest ever. But I saw a side-by-side video of Simone Biles and Nadia Comaneci's floor exercise routine. The contrast in terms of athleticism, in terms of degree of difficulty, was absolutely stunning. Now, Nadia, she was like 86 pounds. And Simone Biles, just an incredible athlete. Unbelievable how strong she is, but also how elegant she is. It's phenomenal to me. And there are some saying she may be the greatest gymnast ever, but I was stunned by that. Nadia Comaneci would probably not medal today compared to the to these young women athletes that are out there competing. So Simone Biles, I think for a lot of people would be, and given the fact that she, you know, came out of very difficult circumstances, her mother was a drug addict. It was her grandparents who chose to bring her into their home, and you said it's really a great witness to the beauty of adoption and how we can come alongside in difficult circumstances and help a person really find hope in their life. And Simone Biles, who then has taken these opportunities and given herself to them. But there's other great stories, too, on that Olympic team. Of course, Simone Biles, a little bit disappointed that she got bronze in the balance beam because of a little wobble. That's one reason why gymnastics is so incredible, because there's such a thin margin and such a thin margin for error when you compete in that. A wobble on the balance beam? I mean, for heaven's sake, I can't stand from my pew to walk to the ambo in mass on the Sunday that I'm assigned to be a lector without a wobble along the way. I can't imagine walking on that several inches wide, unforgiving piece of board. Anyway, give me a shout if you want to chime in. 573-4-BREAD-4. 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. We've been talking a good bit about the presidential election over the last few weeks. It's, of course, a big issue in everyone's mind. One thing that I've been surprised at, and I've been very clear that I cannot support either major party candidate for president. They are both too highly morally problematic. They both stand for things that are intrinsic moral evils. They both appear to me to have a level of corruption. I'm just not comfortable voting for either. So you can save your, well, a vote for, not voting for X is going to be really a vote for Y and so forth. I can, in good conscience, participate in the election of either of these two candidates for presidency. One person who disagrees with me is Eric Metaxas. Eric Metaxas, who I think I've had a guest on my as a guest on my program before,
is the acclaimed biographer of a book about Dietrich Bonhoeffer. If you are familiar with his work, just which is a brilliant work, a very thick, a masterpiece of the Lutheran pastor who refused to go along with the Nazis and who was ultimately arrested and convicted for his participation in a plot to assassinate Adolf Hitler, was hanged really not long before the end of World War II. Really a great testimony and witness to fidelity to the truth in the midst of tyranny. Eric Metaxas, of all people, is not someone that I would expect would throw his support behind Donald Trump. And yet he has. Not just begrudgingly, he's the lesser of two evils. Eric Metaxas, positively for Trump. It's left me kind of scratching my head because I've had a lot of respect for Eric Metaxas, and that has, I'll be honest with you, that respect has been compromised. This story in the Daily Beast, Mark Oppenheimer, it says, it talks about how over the past several election cycles, there have been an increasingly vocal and financially generous class of Jewish Republican donors, men drawn to Republican fiscal policy and what they perceive as warmth toward Israel. In their giving, they have often resembled conservative evangelicals who are typically to their right on matters like abortion and gay rights, but with whom they share a love of the free market, a fear of government intrusion, and strong support for Israel. But this time around, as Oppenheimer says, major Jewish conservatives, Sheldon Adelson and Bernie Marcus, being prominent exceptions, have abandoned Trump, seeing in his campaign the kind of enmity toward immigrants, aliens, and underdogs that historically has boded very badly for the Jews. Meanwhile, evangelicals, as Oppenheimer writes, are heavily in for Trump. According to polls, the vast majority of evangelicals will vote for the twice-divorced, biblically illiterate, lapsed Presbyterian who has refused to say if he was ever involved with a woman who had an abortion. And not just the masses in the pews. Many of conservative Protestantism's leading spokespreachers, Richard Land, Ralph Reed, Jerry Falwell Jr., James Dobson, have all come out for Trump. That's one reason why I saw an article, and I think that has some merit, that evangelicals owe Bill Clinton an apology, because back in the 90s, we heard constantly that character matters. Now it appears that it really doesn't. As Oppenheimer says, the split between Jewish and Christian conservatives is troubling, not because I'm rooting for conservative unity. Oppenheimer puts his cards on the table. He's a liberal. He said, but because it says what it says about Christians' real agenda when it comes to Jewish interests. Despite serious Jewish misgivings about Trump, and despite the ominous historical parallels his campaign conjures, his status as the not Hillary is what really matters. Then he gets into this, what he calls the strange case of author Eric Metaxas. He really should get Jews, Oppenheimer says. He's the author of this book about Bonhoeffer. He's literate in Jewish history, and he's knowledgeable about our struggles. He's hosted live discussions, talking with other conservatives, including Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. And as a New Yorker, a Yalie, and a media guy, he lives and works with Jews all the time. And yet Oppenheimer says Metaxas came out for Trump last month and has spoken widely of his support since. Now, one of the things that Metaxas is a historian of fascism, of all things, having written so much about Bonhoeffer and researched. He says Metaxas didn't seem to have perceive a conflict between his Jew friendliness and his Trump support. Now, here was the thing that got me. When I asked him about these conflicts, Oppenheimer says, Metaxas basically agreed that Trump and his supporters have behaved badly toward immigrants, Muslims, and the disabled. But what he sees are the forgivable actions of a cranky uncle who is basically harmless but doesn't know when to shut up.
Oppenheimer says, when I turned toward Trump's alarming attitudes toward Jews, the tweet from his campaign that showed Hillary against a field of dollar bills and a Star of David, his reported comment about my Jews supporting Christmas, he grew more cautious, saying if there were any real evidence of anti-Semitism in Trump, Metaxas said, he wouldn't support Trump. Metaxas said he used to worry about Trump, but at some point, for some reason, he stopped worrying and learned to love. He had no come-to-Jesus moment about Trump's fundamental goodness. When he was working on a New Yorker piece mocking Trump, he realized the man had a better side. I saw humanity in him that I didn't think was there before, and I would put him more in the category of a relative who is basically a good guy, like an uncle, but he says a lot of things you don't agree with. But in his core, he's not Machiavellian or genuinely xenophobic or bigoted. If I believed he were, I wouldn't vote for him. So when we get back from the break, I'm going to tell you my problem with this argument by Metaxas. It's a check me if I'm wrong, Sandy, to channel Caddyshack a little bit there issue. So I'll tell you what on the other side of the break. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Wednesday, August 17th. Asking a question of the day, who do you think has been Rio's most inspiring Olympian? 573-4BREAD-4. You can call or text, email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or post your thought on Facebook or on Twitter. Tony Rossi, my guest in the second hour, will be talking about some of those inspiring stories. By the way, if some people get their way, you could have inspiring stories, I guess, in some of these suggested potential future Olympic sports. This from CBSNews.com. Six unlikely sports vying to make it to the games. Story's actually from 4 years ago, so I guess none of these succeeded this time around. Thank goodness. First is pole dancing. Pole dancing as an Olympic event. Pole vaulting, yes. Pole dancing, please. Number two, sheep shearing. I would take that over the one we just mentioned, but sheep shearing as an Olympic sport, why not? Let's see, how about three, yoga as an Olympic sport, potentially? Let's see, ballroom dancing, or called more euphemistically, dance sport. Certainly more physically demanding than some other of the Olympic games. Squash. Interesting. I could see squash. And let's see. The other one is cheerleading as an Olympic sport. They have world championships and all the rest. So we'll see. I saw someone, I guess with tongue in cheek, suggested hot dog eating, food games, bowling as future Olympic sports. I mean, some people say you've added golf. Why not? Anyway, give me your thoughts, your favorite Olympic sport. Anyway, back to this whole issue with Eric Metaxas, the evangelical biographer of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, somebody who, surprisingly to me, has come out not simply saying, I will begrudgingly vote for Donald Trump as the lesser of two evils, but someone who's come out really with an enthusiastic endorsement of Mr. Trump, a guy who wrote so eloquently about the plight of the Jews in the years leading up to World War II under Nazi fascism, the courage of Bonhoeffer to stand up to tyranny. And then here's a guy who
every time it seems like every other time he opens his mouth, he's saying something that either is that is very difficult to reconcile with a Christian worldview. I mean, let's just say that about Trump. As I've already told you, I can't vote for Hillary Clinton. Not only set aside the concerns and questions about her honesty, and the concerns about, of course, her corruption, but she is so all in on abortion, so all in, and so really, I think, going to be hostile to religious freedom as well on some issues, particularly the nature of marriage, that I cannot vote for Hillary Clinton, someone who wants to repeal the Hyde Amendment, for heaven's sake. Come on. But Donald Trump either. But what gets me here about Metaxas is Metaxas, you know, basically says that, you know, he's not the person I feared he was in the beginning. He's like an uncle who just can't help himself. In fact, Metaxas says this about Trump. He says, you have to see it at least partially as shtick, he said. He doesn't communicate the way a standard politician communicates. It is kind of a New York shtick, and the rest is sloppiness. But that is different from a brazen lie. There's the distinction. See, now here's where we get the logical gymnastics of some Trump supporters. Because I thought the very thing we were supposed to love about Donald Trump is that he speaks his mind. He says the things that other people are afraid to say, not politically correct. He says what he means and means what he says. That's what I like about Donald Trump, to which I've always said, that's what frightens me. If he's saying what he thinks, dear Lord, it's scary what he thinks. But now the spin is, as per Eric Metaxas, or the reaction to those who defended him for his comments about some of you Second Amendment people being able to stop some of Hillary's Supreme Court nominees, which could be read as a very thinly veiled call to violence. Now, look, I for one, for the most part, I don't think Donald Trump is largely a racist. I don't think he's got his KKK hood tucked away in his closet. Yeah, I think there's some misogyny there. But the thing that bothers me most about Donald Trump is that he taps into some of the ugliest currents in our culture. He fans the flames of these things as a cheap political ploy. But those of you who support Trump, that's not what you say. You say he says what he means. He says what he thinks, except when he doesn't. Oh, you can't take him seriously about that Second Amendment comment. He was just using a figure of speech. He was just joking. See, there's an inconsistency. Does he say what he means, or does he not? Make up your mind. Make up your mind, Eric Metaxas. Your explanation to me comes pretty thin. 573-4BREAD-4. If you want to chime in, you are more than free. 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Let's look back in history a little bit on this day, August the 17th, over the ages. What are some other things that have happened? On this day in 1590, John White returned to Roanoke, North Carolina, to find no trace of the colonists he had left there 3 years earlier. Wasn't that where all that was written was Croatoan or something like that? Great mystery. Davy Crockett, born on this day in 1786. Happy 230th to the guy who died at the Alamo. Let's see, in 1933, Lou Gehrig played his record 1,308th consecutive game. Of course, he would play about 800 more straight games. 1940, Hitler ordered the total blockade of Great Britain. Happy birthday to Robert De Niro, 73 years old today. That could have been a great question. What's the best Robert De Niro role ever? I mean, so many to choose from. I loved, of course, his run as Al Capone in The Untouchables. Baseball. Anyway, happy birthday as well to Sean Penn, a a very interesting individual who I often disagree with on political issues, but I will give you, he's a tremendous actor. Dead Man Walking, I think maybe his finest work, though his work in Mystic River, boy, that's a dark movie. Very, very good. Let's see, 1969, Hurricane Camille slammed into the Gulf Coast, killing 248 people. And in 2002, Pope John Paul II arrived in Krakow, Poland for the 9th and final visit to his native country during his papacy. So those are some of the things throughout the years, August 17th in history. 573-4-BREAD-4 if you want to chime in, 573-4-BREAD-4. Interesting piece in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, why good storytellers are happier in life and in love. I guess they did some research and some study about how attractive people found other people to be. I think in the study it was primarily women, how attractive they viewed men if they could tell a good story. And, that I thought that's a great an interesting way of looking at things, right? Because storytelling is a great skill. It's a great gift. It can be an art. And evidently, it increases someone's attractiveness, believe it or not. But it got me thinking about that because the this is why our hearts are wired for God, by the way. Just here's a little bit more of this story here. In William Shakespeare's time, the word conversation meant two things, verbal discourse and sex. That's how intimate the most well-known poet and playwright in the English language viewed the act of talking with another person. It goes on just to talk about the importance of stories. But here's the beautiful thing about God, right? For the one for whom our hearts and lives are wired, and I'll pick this up a little bit, I guess, in the next hour, too, is that the beautiful thing about God is not only does God tell a great story through salvation history, through his work, through the scriptures, not only does he tell a great story, it is a great story that is true. As the late J.R. Tolkien said, what sets the stories of scripture apart, the great salvation narrative, and that it resembles perhaps some of the great stories throughout human history. The difference is that Christianity is the myth that is true. And so salvation history is the great story. It's the great story of God's working. So not only does God tell a great story as through the inspired scripture, but that story is true. But it gets even better than that. And we'll talk about this a little bit in the next segment. The story that God writes involves you and me. This is why our hearts ultimately are wired for God, and they are forever restless until they rest in Him. All has to do with our place in the story God is telling. We'll get it on the other side of the break. 573-4-BREAD-4 if you want to chime in. This is the Mike Allen Show. Welcome to Breadbox Media.
Listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.